A 3-1 Rangers third period lead quickly evaporated against the rival Islanders Tuesday night at the Garden. Not without some controversy, though. Molly, the Blue Shirts have now lost three straight games. It feels like deja vu on this podcast.
Yeah, you know, I think Jacob Trouba said it best. It's not the start to the season that they thought it would be. And he said that it's not lost on the guys in the room, that this is not the start to the season that they want to be having. So there was definitely, I don't want to say alarm bells, but a sense of urgency in the locker room after that Islanders loss. So I'm very curious to see how they take it from here, because 6-5-3 to start the season is just not good enough for a team coming off a run to the Eastern Conference Final.
We'll discuss the losing streak and look ahead to the week ahead with our pal Larry Brooks. And we're joined by special guest, former Ranger, a Stanley Cup champion with the Devils, and NHL Network analyst, Mike Rupp. Lots to do next on Up in the Blue Seats from the New York Post.
Ladies and gentlemen, we ask that you direct your attention to center ice for a special presentation.
Welcome to Up in the Blue Seats, our New York Rangers podcast from the New York Post. Mike Rupp, Stanley Cup champion, former Ranger, one of my favorite analysts. You see him on NHL Network. Rupper will join us later in the show. Our Hockey Hall of Fame writer, Larry Brooks, is going to join us in just a minute. I'm Jake Brown, the podfather, along with the Queen of the Post, Rangers beat writer, Molly Walker. Molly, the Rangers are losers of three straight, and Tuesday night was a tough pill to swallow. One, because you blew a two-goal lead for the second straight game, this time in the third period. You do it against the Islanders, who you've now lost to twice. You do it to an Islander team that you only play one more time, which we've debated on this show before is a disgrace that their matchups against the crosstown rival are over in December, and we don't even see them again in 2023. And you do it after a controversial no-tripping call against Wahlstrom on Kako, 4 seconds later, game-winning goal. Your thoughts on the no-tripping call?
Yeah, you know, it was an egregious missed call, for sure. It was a blatant trip. And let me tell you, that Wahlstrom, he's got some serious bite to his game. And it was kind of fun watching Alexi Lafreniere kind of try to give him an answer for it, because Alexi Lafreniere has a little bit of that in him, too. But it was definitely an egregious missed call. And you could tell that Rangers head coach Gerard Gallant was not happy. He didn't explicitly say his thoughts on the no call, because he's really just never been one to criticize the officiating. And he's honestly, he's always the first one to commend the officiating. Actually, he always talks about how difficult of a job it is. So I don't think he wanted to go down that road. But you could tell that he really was not pleased. And, you know, he was asking, you guys saw it, you know, you guys saw how it all unfolded. So he definitely was not pleased. And why would you be? I do agree with him. Aside from the third period, I think the Rangers played one of their better games through the first two periods. But I think Vincent Trocheck said it pretty well. It kind of felt like they were playing not to lose. And that's just a trait that, you know, they kind of have to nix immediately, nip that in the butt as soon as humanly possible, because that's not the way for a team like the Rangers to be playing. So it was a pretty deflating loss. And I think it'll be very telling to see how the Rangers move on from here.
All right, Molly, well, let's get right into it with our Hockey Hall of Fame writer, Larry Brooks. Follow him on Twitter at NYP_Brooksy. The hat won today. What hat is that you have on, Larry?
Cornell Hockey, proud supporter of the Big Red.
The Big Red's playing a little bit better than the blue and white, the Rangers right now, the red, blue, and white, whatever we want to call it. The non-tripping call, Larry, let's start there. What happened there?
It was a non-tripping call. It appeared as if Kako had possession of the puck along the boards, you know, on the half wall or a little bit lower, and Wahlstrom tripped him, and it wasn't called. Whether it was just missed or ignored, you know, it's impossible to say, but the Rangers did not react well to it, obviously, and you know, it's probably foolish to cite one non-call as you know, the reason. You know, I mean, it's not the reason the Rangers didn't bring any kind of a game in the third period. It's you know, when things go bad, they go bad. And you're not getting calls, you're not getting breaks, the puck's not bouncing right. But on the other hand, it is true that teams earn their breaks, and the Rangers really didn't earn any break in the third period last night. It was a missed call, but it was also a couple of missed assignments following that. So, it's not as if the puck went in when Kako was tripped by Wahlstrom. So, there was more to the much more or much less to the defeat than that.
I feel like when they say when it rains, it pours, it couldn't be any more true. And, that was a pretty deflating one for the Rangers against the Islanders. I mean, you kind of touched on it on your overall assessment of how it unfolded, but could you also just speak to the vibes that you got in the locker room? Because they were different than they have been after a lot of the other losses earlier this season.
There was concern. There was real concern, and there wasn't a heavy volume of players in the room. But, when Adam Fox walks out and says, look, this isn't last year, we can't rely on last year. When Artemi Panarin says, Panarin, who's always looking for the good. And he did, it wasn't gloom and doom. But, it was close. Go on a tangent. I remember Brad Richards, when the Rangers went back to Tampa the first time with Brad Richards after he had gone to the Rangers from Dallas. So it was Richie's first trip back. And at the morning skate, all of the Tampa writers were over talking to him about, the cup win, the cup year in Tampa, and welcome back, Richie. So I kind of appeared from the background and was walking toward him, and Richie looks around to the group of Tampa writers. Oh, here comes gloom and doom.
Oh no!
Because he had not been playing well.
Yeah,
and I had just written a column about him, so.
But a little bit of a reality check from you.
Yeah, a reality check for Brad Richards. That's right. But anyway, when our Tommy Panarin talks about, this has to change, even Vincent Trocheck talking about a loss of confidence and no swagger. Yeah, this one hit because they played a very, very strong 40 minutes last night. And, they played a reasonable facsimile of the way they want to play and have to play. Shesterkin was very, very good. They were hard on the puck. They were drawing penalties. They forced the Islanders into four minors and, within 12 minutes, bridging the first and second. They had pretty good structure. They had good possession, scored twice on the power play. So their signature was all over the game. They give up the goal. They give up a goal 14 seconds into the third. Not sure if it was a great goal either. The pucks are going through Shesterkin, and you don't want to scape. I'm not scapegoating the goalie. It's easy to do. But, he won the Vezina last year. He carried them last year. And, there's a certain dependence on the goalie being elite. They haven't, he hasn't been. So, they give up the goal 14 seconds in, and their game just evaporated. This was not the first 40 minutes Rangers. This was, as I said, give the Islanders all sorts of credit. I mean, they come back now. They have the best third period goal differential in the league. It's interesting. It's not last year for the Rangers, but it's not last year for the Islanders either. It's like 2 years ago for the Islanders. 2 years ago for the Islanders. But I don't think the Islanders seized the game as much as the Rangers left it there, because the Rangers just didn't generate anything. There was no energy. And whether that's representative of a lack of confidence, I don't know, but it was a staggering defeat. Doesn't mean they can't come back from it. There are 68 games left, so there is time to come back for it. But they have to get this straightened out quickly. They're below the cut line. Teams in the East are much better than they were last year. So this is six out of the next seven on the road. It's going to be, they're facing a real challenge.
Going back to Igor Shesterkin, the one thing I've really noticed about him this season that was not so much a factor last season is his rebound control. It just hasn't been the same. And I feel like a lot of teams have scored on putbacks or just battling around the net. I guess, are you seeing the same thing from him?
I think that's part of it, yeah. And compounding that is the fact that the Rangers are just not defending the front of the net well at all. But yes, I see that, because I also see, and again, speaking for you, if I can, you know, we're not goaltending experts, right? We're just not. But he doesn't seem to be seeing the puck as well to me. And that might be a cause of why he's kind of stabbing at pucks and leaving those rebounds. He just doesn't seem to be tracking the puck as well. And I thought he did last night in the first two periods. That was one of the things early. I thought he was seeing through screens. He was in position. So again, I wouldn't have the first idea what to say to him about, hey, this is what you need. I mean, you know, it's Chris Kreider kind of watching. Chris, you've got to move your feet. You know, that's easy. Anyone can almost coach Chris Kreider. You got to move your feet, Chris. I wouldn't have the slightest idea what to say to Igor Shesterkin. But there's a heavy burden on him, and I know, you know he's a younger player, but it's his fourth year in the league now. It's imperative that he regains whatever it is that he has lost, because the Rangers have no chance if he's an average goalie. None. You know, few teams do. I mean, you know, it is almost impossible to win with average goaltending. Maybe if you have McDavid and Draisaitl, you can get by. But, you know, this team is built on their goaltending and to a certain degree, their special teams and Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider, Fox. You know, they're built on elite players. Nobody is playing close to elite hockey at this point.
I mean, stellar goaltending was their X factor last season. So was Chris Kreider. But, you know, confidence in who's in net has kind of always been the Rangers' trademark. How concerned should people be if Shesterkin isn't giving the Rangers that otherworldly goaltending?
Very concerned. But I also go back to the standard that Lundqvist established, where he carried the Rangers basically for 12 years. He wasn't always at his best in October. In fact, early in his career, October, early November were the most mediocre of his seasons. So there is room for Shesterkin to turn this around, but he's an entirely different personality than Lundqvist is. This is a different team. You know, it's a different scenario. I would think there'd be a level of great concern if their goaltending does not rise to an elite status this year.
If you're Coach Gallant, you've already seen him make some lineup adjustments. What do you do to try to turn this around? What does Coach Brooksy do?
Well, one thing I would try and do, and one thing I was thinking about writing is about, and it's a difficult challenge. I think they need to get Hedel onto the ice more. They have to find a way to get Hedel onto the ice more. He had, what, about 12 minutes last night, I think. And I get it. I mean, Zibanejad is their first-line center. Trocheck, who I thought played well last night, he was involved all night. He gets there. You know, he's second-line minutes, and so third-line minutes for Hedel. But I think you need to find a way to get Filip Hedel onto the ice more often. And that's a real challenge. Now, I wouldn't mind reuniting the kid line and using them as their second line, but I don't know how the rest of the team you'd configure the rest of the team around that. You'd almost have to have a first line of Panarin, Zibanejad, and Kreider. I mean, unless you're putting Chris with Trocheck on the third line. And I know I've received on social media messages and emails about, you can't use Trocheck as the third line center when you're paying him 5.65. To me, that's not an issue. You don't make your lineup based on your payroll structure. That has nothing to do with it. It's you know, would it make sense if Kreider, Trocheck, say, and VC were their third line? But then that would mean Kravtsov would be on the first line. Or would you move Goodrow up to play on the top line? You know, I'm not sure, but I do think that, you know, this is all goes back to trying to find a way to get Filip Hedel more ice time, because again, he doesn't get on much on the power play. The second unit doesn't get much time on the power play. We know that. So there's just not there's not a lot of opportunity for him to be on the ice if you're going Zibanejad, Trocheck, who are both on the first power play, were both among their top four in penalty killers. You know, there's a little, like we talked about this, I think, last week. There's a lot of ice time now being given to the top players on the team. And I think there's you know, we're only 14 games into the season. And Zibanejad's minutes are up considerably. Trocheck's are up considerably from where Strome was last year. I think Gallant needs to find a way to smooth that out a little bit. You know, I'm not suggesting that this would be an immediate turnaround. You know, last week I suggested that Seth Jones play with Trouba and didn't work out so well in their one game. So, you know, I'm not a candidate for the coaching job. So, but I just would like, you know, to see a little bit more of Hedel. I'd like to see a little bit more of Lafreniere, who still needs to bring a more consistent game. He plays with more snarl against the Islanders than he does the other team in the league. I don't know why that is. He's always involved. He's always talking. Like the first two periods, Lafreniere last night was the playoff type Lafreniere in the Islanders' faces, the way he was in Pittsburgh's faces and Carolina's faces. He doesn't do that every game. I don't know what the dynamic is with him. But I'd like to see Lafreniere be more involved. And I think there's a comfort zone when he's playing with Hedel. That would be something I would look to do. Listen, there, you know, this is who they have. You can't constantly rearrange the pieces either, but they haven't gotten to a point where it's possible to solidify their rotation either. You know, in a couple of their best years back in 13-14, 14-15, with Vigneault behind the bench, he changed things all the time. He used the first two or three months of the season as almost an extended training camp. I don't think this team can afford to do that because I think the competition is too stiff. I think they haven't found a formula that works. And so I don't think Gallant should be married to anything, but boy, I'd like to see the kids play together. But again, it's not about them. It's about constructing their most formidable team. And you'd have to take a real look again at you know, what the first and third lines would be if you use the kids as the second line.
You can pick up a copy of the New York Post. You can go to nypost.com. You can go to Post Sports Plus, and you can follow him on Twitter at NYP_Brooksy. Larry Brooks, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
All right. Great stuff from Larry Brooks. And Molly, I expected better on a night where a guy shot the puck from center ice into a small little hole and won a Hyundai Tucson, whatever it was. Usually that I think of Jackie Moon and semi-pro where they give him the fake check because they didn't think he was going to make the half court shot. This guy really won a car. Days after, the guy hit the half court shot at the Garden. Knicks lost to the Celtics. Rangers lose to the Islanders. What the hell's going on? The fans have been more entertaining than the team they're going to watch.
I didn't even know about the half court shot at the Knicks game, but that's pretty funny. You know, it was absolutely wild. It was, I think his reaction was the best part of the whole thing. Like just the pure shock and awe on his face and like the shot of him sitting in the car and waving and you know, doing the surf's up hand gesture. It was really funny. It was good vibes.
They've given up two cars in a 4-day span at MSG. I think they've hit their quota. They might need a new sponsor to give out something else, give out like a washing machine like they did in semi-pro. But that was like a little crevice too. That's art. I don't know what's tougher, you think, hitting that small little hole or hitting a half court shot?
Probably the small little hole. Oh my God, especially when you're sliding it on the ice, like that can go anywhere. But we were actually all talking about it in the press box. We were wondering, does he just like drive out of the Garden in that? Like if you've ever been in the lower level, there's like a very like long ramp that just goes down where like players park their cars and all that kind of stuff. And we were just wondering, does he just drive out of the arena in it? Like, I wonder how that comes to be.
It's interesting giving away cars in New York City where like me and a lot of people don't have a car and don't have use for it. But hey, you know, pay the taxes and the rest, it's all yours, buddy. Enjoy the car. Two cars in a week at the Garden. What's next? Let's have these teams win some games now. How about that? Fans are winning everything. Well, a guy who won some games, won a Stanley Cup. It's got a beautiful dome. He's just got a big bald head like me, except a little bit shinier than mine because he's on TV. That's Mike Rupp. He's going to join up in the Blue Seats next.
We can't, like we've talked about, rest on last year and say we did that last year. So got to right the ship here.
All right, joining us now, you catch him on the NHL Network, of course, where he is an analyst. He is the host of the That's Hockey Talk podcast. You can watch every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. He's a Stanley Cup champion with the Devils. He played parts of two seasons with the Rangers. Follow him on Twitter at Rupper17. Welcome to the show. Let's welcome him back, Mike Rupp. Mike, when you go on TV, what do they do to your head? Do they powder it up? Do they use cocoa butter? What do they do for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, so I figured if I can cover half my face with hair, the half that I can control because I don't have hair up top, then I only have to powder up this spot, right? So the only thing I got to make sure I don't get the glare off the forehead. So yeah, just powder up the forehead, take away the shine a little bit. You'd be amazed at my knowledge of makeup now for those situations. And but yeah, just get it so it doesn't reflect too much. We don't want too much glow off the top.
Molly, you know about that, right? You know a little bit of hair and makeup.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, guys, when it's, we have a makeup crew at NHL Network, and that's, you know, they're awesome. I don't have to worry about it. But then when I do, whether it's MSG stuff or stuff in the past, doing, remote stuff, they gave me a little package and I ran out of the stuff. So I needed to order some more stuff, and some of it's matched to my skin tone and all these things. So I go online, I'm flipping over like these compacts, and it says like, M490Z. I'm like, is that my color? Like, I don't know what that is. So I just type that in a Google search, and it's overwhelming trying to buy makeup. So I give a lot of credit to you women out there, man. That's a process.
All right, guys, look, I know this is a Rangers podcast and there's a lot going on with them right now, and we will get to all that, but I feel like we have to start with Isaiah Meyer Crothers. If you're not up to date, the Bruins signed Mitchell Miller to a contract a few days ago, despite the fact that it came out when the Coyotes initially drafted him that he was convicted in juvenile court for heinous and racially motivated bullying when he was 14. The Bruins did ultimately cut ties with Miller after significant backlash and after it was apparent that Miller had not made amends with Isaiah or his family or really done much to prove that he has come back from such horrible incidents, which I don't even know if you can come back from that. But Isaiah just released a statement in his own words. And I'll be honest with you guys, I'm really just sick to my stomach. And I feel like all we've been hearing is from everybody else, Isaiah's mom, the Bruins, Cam Neely, Miller's agent, King. And now that we finally hear from him, I just feel like it's important for us to open the dialogue here. So I guess just, Rupp, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how this all unfolded, just from the Bruins to Miller's camp and everything in between.
Yeah, you know what, Molly, it's yeah, I agree with you too. And just full transparency as we're doing this, that, you know, Isaiah's message was just tweeted out there, right? So this is fresh with us reading it, and it's like I have goosebumps, but like bad goosebumps, like uncomfortable. Like I feel certain things right now from reading Isaiah's words there. And I know that you guys do as well, but like, so here's my thing that just to talk about it from the Bruins standpoint, first off, just speaking in general terms, I believe in second chances. I do. I think most of us do, but there's certain things that have to be done to get those second chances. And that's part of this situation here. But just from the Bruins standpoint of wanting to go and try to see if they can, you know, maybe give that second chance or have this player bring him into this organization, I think for the level of what he's been accused of and what we've already found in court and when he was 14, what Mitchell Miller is done, it takes more than, I think, especially nowadays in our society, when we're finally talking about things a little more openly and things are starting to be more transparent out there, you have to have a plan in place. There has to be something. All right, this is what we are looking to do. This is what we have research. This is what we have found, and this is the plan moving forward. I think at least being able to provide people with some things like that, it maybe would have been taken a little bit better, or at least, but it was just like this, we're signing this player. Hold on a second. You can't just, you could do that, but we as a society got to look out for one another. This is, I'm sorry, it's bullshit. Like it is, you know what I mean? Like, so I think there's a way that this has to play out that didn't happen. So, you know, I think since then with Cam Neely and the Bruins are taking ownership, I actually liked what Cam Neely said, where he's like, this is on us. This is a total shortfall on our end. I don't know where this goes, but I agree with you. Having Isaiah, something has to be done here. I think and that's where it gets tough too. Like, what is genuine now at this point? Because he's been drafted, you know, that's been rescinded. The contract's been given, that's been rescinded. At what point now are we getting to the point where it's not genuine? You know what I mean? And this sucks because this kid just needs to, there needs to be some amends here. Some Isaiah needs to find that some sort of closure to this so he can move on with his life. And from what we just read, that's not happening. And that's what tears me up, right? Like, you got to get on with your life. Not now, you have to get on with it. I mean, he has to feel like this is closure, and he hasn't received that from Mitchell. So at least that's what we're seeing here. So, man, this is, I don't know. I don't know where it goes from here. I really don't.
But if we're going to turn to the Rangers and to actual hockey talk here, Gerard Gallant gave the Rangers a 6 out of 10 after the first 11 games or so. I'm curious, Rupp, what would you give the Rangers at this point in time?
So I would say, I mean, a 6 is coming from the coach who's overly happy. I'd give them a little bit more than that. I think the Rangers have been a team that has been just okay. They've been all right. They've had stretches where they look good, and they have stretches where they don't. And right now, I think over the last couple of games, they've looked good. They just haven't gotten the results. I mean, you can even argue that back when they got shut out by the Islanders, when they had 40 plus shots, whatever. Like, they're getting some looks. They're not getting the finish. They're not closing out games like last night. So that's been an issue. But I would probably give them more, like maybe a 7. Like maybe a 7. Yeah. So I think they're okay. And I think the one thing that a lot of these fan bases have to look at, and it's not trying to make excuses for their teams, but a lot of teams are going through this. There's a lot of really good teams, but we have a lot of question marks, and there's a lot of teams that we weren't expecting too much from that I'm not willing to crown yet. I think those examples would be the Winnipeg Jets, Dallas Stars, New Jersey Devils. Like, I mean, they look great and I love what I'm seeing from them, but we got to kind of slow it down here. So the Rangers, I think that it was kind of funny though, because for the Ranger fans, obviously watching this, we posed this question on NHL Network the other day, because I don't feel like there is a team. They said, who's the team that is best structured to win the Stanley Cup this year? So not necessarily what they look like right now, but on paper, and when you're looking at a roster and everything, as far as checking off certain things, who's got everything covered? And the reason why we asked that is because right now, I don't think anybody feels good about any team. That team's going to win the Cup, or that team's going to the finals. Like, it could be anybody right now, but the Rangers came up is a team that I think when you look at the build of this team, the roster, they've got everything checked, in my opinion. All the boxes are checked. There's a lot of teams that don't have that. I mean, you could argue, let's look at the final four teams last year. We'll put the Rangers aside. Then you got Tampa, who their blue line has question marks. They miss Andre Palat. They have a lot of question marks with how guys are going to be slotted up in their lineup. They haven't looked that great to this point either. They've played better lately. And then you can go out to Colorado. Colorado is, I mean, we're not totally sure on their goaltending. Their defense is good, but they're really banged up. They just said yesterday that they have all these guys missing time. And then their forward group, it's after their top line. And right now, it's a significant drop. They lost some pieces. Edmonton's got goalie issues, and kind of the same story with them as depth scoring and D. So anyways, you just look across the board. I think the Rangers actually are set up really nice. Now it's a matter of just playing the right way, the right time of year. They're not there yet, but they don't really need to be. So I think they'll be fine. I think Gerard's doing what he can to push the buttons of Chris Kreider and use him as an example. And he's trying to keep everybody accountable, so we'll see how it works long term.
You made the Eastern Conference Finals 10 years ago with the Rangers. Is there such a thing as a hangover from that kind of season? Is this Rangers team having a hangover like we would on a Saturday morning after a Friday night bender? Is that an actual thing?
You know what? I think it is teams and individuals. I think the hardest thing in the NHL is dealing with expectations and dealing with feeling like you've accomplished something. I mean, you could try to sugarcoat it all you want if you want to give yourself a pat on the back or, make the guys on your team feel good about things. But only one team was successful last year. I mean, every team comes in to win a Stanley Cup. for the Rangers, I guess these hangovers, if you will, from teams or these drop-offs from what we've seen, I think it's due to teams feeling like they've accomplished something. You haven't accomplished anything. Like, listen, I the Rangers are awesome last year and what we saw, and they're ahead of schedule. But they did that because they had a chip on their shoulder. Don't lose that chip. That chip is what separated you last year and made you go on that run. So I'm not saying this is happening with them, but you didn't accomplish anything. You know, you didn't win a Stanley Cup. You didn't make it to the finals. Like, so I think that's really important. And good coaches, and you know, I'm sure Gerard Gallant, I had him, he's an awesome coach, is stating that. John Tortorella is doing that in Philly after a couple of games when Philly's the talk of the town and they've won some games. What's he do? He sits down, connect me and Hayes in the third period. Just, I think literally I went back and I watched. I didn't really see anything overly egregious that he would sit them. I think it was just like, hey, fellas, don't believe the hype. You haven't done anything yet. Like, this is a long-term process. We're going to sit those guys, get everybody's attention. And this team has kind of kept going a little bit. So, yeah, I think it's more of just don't lose your thunder. Don't lose your edge. This was a team that I don't think many places and across the NHL had that much expectation for last year. Surprised a lot. Now, all of a sudden, they're considered to be a favorite. Can't let it get good to you in those situations. So I think it's just a matter of knowing that you still got to keep that edge and have that chip on your shoulder, I think.
What were your impressions of Gallant as a coach?
I loved him. He was honest as you can be. I mean, he was great. I felt like he was kind of the type of coach you wanted to play for, almost like that high school hockey or high school football, I should say, mentality. Like, you want to go through a wall for that coach. And I think that's special because you don't get that a lot of times. You can't manufacture it. You just feel it, that he's in it with you. And I always felt like that with Gerard, but he's straightforward and honest. Like, he tells you, he almost does it. You know, you can tell he's got his, you know, when he speaks, he has the same look on his face. And sometimes there's sarcasm. Sometimes it's serious. Sometimes he's mad. Sometimes he's not. He's joking. He looks the same. So you got to like be able to read that. And but he'll sit there and he'll just tell you something that you think that would just rip you down. And he gets that little smirk and gives you a wink. He's like, I know you got this. Like, come on. So he believes in you. And I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, I definitely think he's a player's coach. That's the impression I've gotten from him. And it's funny how you kind of described the way that he talks, because it's true. You know, obviously, it's a different kind of setup for the media. It's a little bit more formal. But if you toss him a question, and it could have absolutely nothing to do with a specific player, but he'll just get right into the point that he wants to make, kind of like what he did with Chris Kreider, you know, talking about how he's got to be pulling in the same direction as the rest of the team. And as of late, he's feeling like he's pulling the other way. I didn't even ask about Chris Kreider specifically, but when he's got a point to make, he's going to make it.
Yeah, no, and I think it's important to pay attention to who they're making points with, too. We know Jacob Trouba is the captain of this team, deservingly so, but let's not forget some of those other guys that were in that conversation. And Chris Kreider was right at the forefront. Longest tenured Ranger. You talked, Jake, about, you know, 10 years ago, that was Kreider's debut, right? He's been with this organization for a long time. Doing it to Chris Kreider, he knows he'll get a reaction. He knows that he'll respond the right way. That's what he's looking for here. He's just looking to squeeze the group, and I think that's important.
Yeah, he did the same thing with Alexei Lafreniere last season. Yeah. Put him on the fourth line in practice, put him on the fourth line in a game. And I remember asking Alexei point blank, like, you know, are you the kind of guy that, you know, responds to that kind of, you know, coaching? And he was like, oh, yeah.
You got to be careful with that. It's funny because the other one that jumps there comes to mind is, remember the Kako scratching in the last game of the playoffs. And it was kind of like, I think because of where they were in the playoffs, and it kind of like snuck under. I mean, everybody took note, but it was like the game's so big. It was whatever. I love where Kaapo Kakko's game is and where it's going. And I don't know if he finds another level without that. I've been the player in that situation because I guarantee you, he was stewing all summer and he was working and he knew, I'm going to, you know, I like this guy, but I'm going to stick it to him. I'm going to show him. I'm going to this. It'd be great to, you know, get that from Kakko at some point. But I think that that's a motivating factor, you know, for him for sure. But it's, you know, you got to kind of plant those seeds and challenge guys, you know, and you got to see what they can do and how they respond. And I will say this, though, I was with Scotty Hartnell working the other day, And we're talking about the torts thing, sitting, connecting, and hey, they reply or start responded the right way. And I remember thinking about this, and it jumped in my head. I'm like, hey, when you were in Columbus with torts, I remember you got scratched or you got scratched or benched. I recall you had like a hat trick or something the next game. He's like, oh, I don't really remember. So our research looked it up. So he got scratched the one game. Then he had like 6 points in his next four games. And there's another one where he got sat a whole third period the next, and that was kind of like the talk. And then the next game he had the hat trick. So I'm like, you got to be careful though, because like a player like Lafreniere, you're going to say the right things, but if you respond too well, you know, he's like, this is how I motivate this guy.
Yeah. Right. You know what I mean? This is the button to push.
Yeah. So now Scotty Hart, I'm like, Hartsy, I'm like, you responded too well though. You have to kind of taper it down where it's like, ah, it kind of worked. But he's like, that's how I motivate him. So you got to be careful how you respond, or the coach is going to be like, oh, I want Repper going. Let's sit his butt down one more time. But yeah, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, John Tortorella is totally one of those coaches that also is a button pusher, if you will.
Yeah, for sure.
When the refs miss a tripping call like they did against the Islanders, what is the reaction in the locker room right after that? Because it's not like the NBA where your players just yelling in the ref's face immediately after a call. You don't get that in NHL.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, but not as much, I feel like. What is the feel in the locker room after that? Is that something you guys are talking about? Like, goddamn, that John Jones, that ref missed that call and pissed off, and you remember that the next time he's officiating?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly talk about it and you vent about it. I mean, as much as fans complain about refereeing, I mean, we certainly do as players. And there's carryover too. I mean, there's a lot of players before games, and you're looking even at the matchup on paper and get the stat pack, and you're going right to the referees and seeing who's reffing the game. And sometimes guys are like, oh, hey, you know, you got to kind of taper our game accordingly. But you know, I think it's really important in the NHL to just move past bad calls. And I find that you get a lot of coaches that I think this is really important, is coaches that are on the bench, they will just tell their players to shut their mouths. If anybody's talking to referees, it's me. And what that does is, because I agree, when there's a missed call or a bad call, it starts eating at you. We know as fans watching, but as players too. And you got to turn that page and keep going, and you can't let that frustration come in. So if you're yelling at the referee and you're yelling from the bench, and that happens all the time, you got to like cut the cord on it at some point. Let the coach be the guy to do it. You express it like, you know, whatever, and let the coach handle that, because you've got to move past it, because there's such a small margin in winning and losing. If you're going to go in between periods and stewing about that, it's like you're almost giving yourself an excuse. You can't lose the edge that you have. And it's funny because the NHL, with everything between that, calls being benched, guys slashing you or whacking you on the ice, like it's all about funneling emotion and funneling it the right way and using it to motivate and to drive you. And if you don't, it can take you down. That's for sure.
Let's close with this. Because you have a drum set behind you, our producer, Andrew Hartz, is actually a drummer. He drums for a country singer, Jessica Lynn. Could you drum us a little song before we send you off?
To be completely honest with you, I'm not at home. This is not mine. I am literally the most non-musically inclined person you'll ever see. I love music. I listen to music. I can talk music. I like every type of music. I'm the worst singer ever. I can't play anything. I actually played the trumpet in high school for a little bit. That didn't last that long. Yeah, but
that was my next question.
Yeah.
I played the clarinet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Little Squidward action.
Yeah, I love it. So you know, it's funny. It's like that's one thing I wish that I was talented in is music, because I love it. I love listening to it, but I am the worst. If everybody's clapping to it, I'm on the offbeat clap. I'm terrible with all that stuff.
That's too bad. Well, I freestyle rap, but I have to be in the right mindset, you know, late at Friday, Saturday night, enough things in the system where my mind is elevated a little bit to get there. And I'm sick and it's too early in the morning to do that. So I won't. Mike Rupp, follow him on Twitter at Rupper17. Check out That's Hockey Talk, the podcast. They go live Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Rupp, great to talk to you. Thanks for coming on Up in the Blue Seats. We'll do it again later in the season.
Awesome, guys. Anytime, and enjoy what you guys are doing.
All right, Molly, great stuff there from Rupper. That'll wrap up episode 101 of Up in the Blue Seats, our Rangers podcast from the New York Post. Thanks to Andrew Hartz for helping me in producing this episode and every episode of the show. Catch up on all episodes of Up in the Blue Seats by subscribing wherever you get podcasts, and subscribe on the New York Post Sports YouTube page to watch full episodes of the show. Follow us on Twitter at Molly Walker, 2 E's, 2 R's, at Jake Brown Radio, at NYP underscore Brooksy. Molly, you are hitting the road next week, and we'll talk about it next week. What is it, 6 cities in 10 days?
I think it's 6 cities in 15 or 16 days, and I'm flying home on Thanksgiving, which I will report back what that experience is like, but I imagine it's like the lower depths of hell.
For Molly Walker, Larry Brooks, Andrew Hartz, I'm the Podfather, Jake Brown. We'll return next Thursday and every Thursday with new episodes of Up in the Blue Seats. Stay safe, everybody, and thanks for listening to Up in the Blue Seats.